61.
Okay. So starting on slide 7, in the disclosure of accounting policies exposure draft, the board is proposing to amend IAS 1 and the materiality practice statement to require entities to disclose their material accounting policies instead of their significant accounting policies. The board is also proposing to provide additional guidance and examples to help entities apply the concept of materiality in making decisions about accounting policy disclosures, both in IAS 1 and the materiality practice statement. The additional guidance and examples being proposed have been summarised on slides 7 and 8. Appendix A is an extract of the proposed new paragraph 117B of IAS 1. And appendices B and C contain extracts of examples S and T proposed for the materiality practice statement. So these proposed amendments are intended to help entities identify and disclose all accounting policies that provide material information to primary users of financial statements and identify immaterial accounting policies and eliminate them from their financial statements. The comment letter period for this exposure draft ends on the 29th of November. So we have three questions for the GPF, which are listed on slide 3. I'll go through them individually. So our first question for you is, will applying the concept of materiality instead of significance make it easier for preparers to identify and disclose only that accounting policy information which is material to the financial statements?
Anybody? Try again.
No. I puzzle about this one because it's sort of, I genuinely believe people don't read account financial statements as if they're a novel. They don't start at the front and read through. You know, if you want to look at the accounting policies, it's in note 32 called accounting policies. If you find that kind of thing tedious or not interesting, you don't have to read it. What we tend to do, we roll them over. We don't change them. We don't even change them by one word, because if we change one word, some people do notice it, and they say, hey, what are you doing there? As if you're changing your accounting policies. And we have a sort of library of them. We don't have, for example, material associates and joint ventures, but we have an accounting policy there in case we do have one, and if anyone wants to know, well, there it is. And I don't see that it hurts. And I think a point also to have in mind is a lot of users don't have a subscription to the IFRS and they don't know what the accounting policy is. Smaller companies do look at the accounts for bigger companies to see how to do it, both within a jurisdiction and worldwide. So actually, probably you can probably find quite a few folks around the world that are looking at our financial statements and drafting their accounting policy disclosures as an example of, I hesitate to say best practice, but sort of good practice. And it's actually helpful to them to do that. So, and just going through arbitrarily each year, pulling a few out and not publishing them that year, and then next year putting them back in because you've got something, I don't really feel it's that. I'm sort of puzzling that it's really such a hot topic that you need to issue guidance on it. I think people should prepare financial statements in a way that's easy for users and is well organised, and you certainly don't want sort of whole loads of superfluous policies. But I think I'm not sure it's really that helpful. I just think it's overpowered.
Okay, Srinya?
Yeah, I think my answer would be yes. The reason is most of the financial statements in public domain, you would see a boilerplate template for accounting policies. It is nothing but cut and paste of what is required in the accounting standards. So this would really help the preparers to focus to disclose only the material information. Having said that, I would also like to know, are you going to withdraw the word significant from other accounting standards and replace with materiality, or is it only specific to accounting policies?
I think that is a a fair question, and it is something we thought about quite a lot. However, there are many other uses of significant in the standards where it's used in a way that is different in the sense that it is significant relative to something else. So an example that was actually discussed at the board table just last month in a disclosure context was about a company being required to disclose, for example, the most significant assumptions or inputs that go into something. And the difference we perceive there is that if you have, say, 10 inputs into something and you're asked which are the most significant, you've got almost a relative ability to make the assessment of what is significant, whereas in the context of accounting policies, as significant is currently used, it's just a single concept without that scale, if you like, and so it's almost significant in the abstract. What is or isn't significant is harder to define. So we are not proposing to change all those uses of significant because we don't believe they're equivalent. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Christoph?
Generally, I agree that focusing on material policies is important. I would always consider a sophisticated user. So even if a policy is material, I would expect if it is, number one, sophisticated, in a sense, the reader knows IFRS, so I don't have to tell him what IFRS provides. And number two, the reader knows my business. I don't have to give him the very basics of my business. We will see later in the example explaining, hey, listen, I'm a telco, I'm selling devices and services, would be something I would expect a reader to know about a telco. But we get to the example later. I struggle a few points with the proposed wording in 117B because somehow the requirement that need to be met or the conditions that need to be met to make the disclosure appear to differ between the different points. So they all have in common it needs to relate to material transactions, other events or conditions. It's already questionable whether the term material in this wording only applies to transactions or events and conditions. So it would be helpful if that could be clarified. I think it should, but the wording is not overly clear. Then in A, you ask additionally it needs to result in a material change to the amounts included in the financial statements. Something similar is not in B. So if I have a material transactions and there are two alternatives, but the alternatives both result in very similar amounts, under the current wording, I would still need to describe them. So something similar to A should be added here, and the alternative result in significantly different amounts. And I think that should be all the way through. Always say, listen, it's not only a material transaction, but a material transaction and a material impact, both needs to be met as you have it for A. That's missing a bit in the others. In D, the notion appears to be you describe your policies and your judgment separately. Honestly, we've given that up, latest with IFRS 15, because it would have been impossible without a hell of a lot of redundancies between the disclosures. It's much easier to say, this is my policy and this is the judgment that I apply in this policy. Before that, we had it, policies here, judgment there. You repeat half of your policy disclosures again to explain to people where you make the judgments. So I think you shouldn't force people to separate the disclosure of policies and judgments. The wording as it currently sounds as if this is what is required, particularly in D, where you refer to the other disclosures as if it was a separate thing. E, I think, is something that applies to all my policies. Yeah. Applying them in my particular context, yes, all my policies I apply in my particular context. That would result in disclosing my entire accounting policy. And as we are Germans with more than 1,000 pages, that would be a pretty long thing to disclose. So look into E. There needs to be a bit of an additional threshold than just disclose it if it is an application in your individual context.
Christoph, Liliana.
Thank you. I'm a little bit between Jan and Sita because I think I put myself in the shoes of a user that is not very familiar with the subtle distinction between different standards. And we will come back with example, but the last example relating to impairment is a very good example. So I think that should be specific to the entity, that we need to make the effort to provide information that is entity specific relating to the principles. I agree with that, but I don't agree. I don't know if I have nothing more else to say relating to one principle specific. I should take out of the principles, because maybe not all the users are, as Christoph said, very familiar or very sophisticated with everything. So that is my first point. The second point, I'm not very clear with the point A, because what's changing during the reporting period? I think that if something is material and I needed to apply a specific policy relating to an event, and the event is reiterating every year, I should every year repeat the disclosure that I made. The change in the reporting period is a little bit bothersome for me.
Thanks. Stephen?
I think the answer to the question is probably yes. So applying the concept of materiality would help. And the reason I say that is because when we're looking at the other materiality project, then actually just having the discussion helped, because it gave people license to really drive home things that before they'd had debates on and just given up. So very helpful. I think it's quite difficult sometimes to make these judgments in practice. And it's also knock-on effect. I agree with Ian's thoughts on smaller companies. You can't necessarily assume a great detailed knowledge, and therefore actually there's a wider communication community activity going on here. But if I think of something like IS 38, recognition of development costs on the balance sheet, so we could say, well, okay, this company doesn't recognise anything on their balance sheet and therefore immaterial, but it does expense a lot of development cost income statement. Maybe that means it is material. And actually, different cultures may apply the rules in different ways. So it's very, very clear, you know, is it technically feasible? Is it commercially viable? Straightforward, apart from trying to apply it. Because people apply different judgments, different gates, in order to meet the recognition criteria. So therefore, I think it's a difficult debate to have on what is really material and what isn't material in accounting policies. Did some research, and the thought was, because a lot of businesses have now started putting the accounting policies in different places throughout the accounts, and the feedback that we got from users was, well, actually, no, we're not really very interested in that, because if we want to see an accounting policy, we know where it is. We'll just go and look. It may be they don't use it very often, but actually when they do want to see an accounting policy, they know where to go to find it and can look at that. I think if we then say, well, go and look in the accounting standards book, then they might find that less convenient.
Stephen Murillo?
I think that changing from significant to material is better. But I'm not sure if it's going to achieve the intended result, because I think it would probably depend on how users would react to the idea of not having what we consider to be boilerplate disclosures in the financial statements. And this debate is not new. I remember years ago listening to users saying that they, at least some of them, liked these boilerplate disclosures because they claimed to be they claim not to be experts in IFRS, so they need these disclosures that sometimes are similar to what we have in the standards, so they can comprehend what they can understand what's written in the financial statement. And if this understanding is widespread among the users community, these wordings here they will not help, because they still they are still attached to what people need to understand the financial statement. If they need that, you would still have these boilerplate disclosures.
Martin, if I could just, knowing that, that Ian's got his sign up again, if I could just make a quick comment on users, because we've had a lot of comments around the table on their views. Just by way of background in terms of why we're doing this at all, coming out of the principles of disclosure discussion paper where we got feedback on all manner of different things, one of the things that came out consistently from just about every user that we heard from is that the accounting policy section does not give them what they need, and in fact they often just don't read it. And if I could almost give a practical example, what they would read would be if they could have a concise summary of, okay, these are the 10 concise extracts from that that are really specific to this company and affect my analysis. And if they could see that in a concise way, it would be really useful. But because it's buried in a lot of lengthy disclosures, some of which are sort of reiterations of the standard, the same year on year, etc., they don't actually find those things because they are difficult to find. So the feedback that led to this was that it is a change that would be beneficial to users. And I just wanted to give that context because I think a few of the views have sort of touched on that feedback that we heard.
Catherine,
Ian? Just to expand on one point, I mean, I'm looking back on my history as a preparer, which was in Russia and Estonia in the 1990s, former Soviet Union, and also helping our Japanese affiliate convert to IFRS. I think you need to be aware that where there's another accounting regime in force, it's actually helpful strategically for the ISB, if you're wanting to roll out IFRS globally, that the preparers in one of these countries are allowed to sort of pretty much put everything on the table. So I remember when we did a lot of boilerplate stuff in the former Soviet Union because people just didn't know. And actually we put the same thing in all of our clients' accounts so that people knew these guys weren't doing something different from somebody else. So I think you should be cognizant you don't restrict people. And I think it would be unwise of the ISB, if you're looking to promote the use of IFRS in places where there are other accounting standards and regimes in place and where most users in that country may be more familiar with that, that you allow the preparers in that country to overdo it, to sort of, even if it's putting stuff that we all know about, that, but actually to put that in there helps promote IFRS across the world and actually helps users in the new countries to actually understand it. I caution you not to be too restrictive.
Sandra?
In response to your comment about the users were the ones that really initiated or drove this group of activity, one of the things I was wondering is that from users that consistently look at the same entities year in and year out, or do they have a different view if it's the first time they're looking at a particular entity or a new industry? I know that when we're looking at companies that we may be interested in from an acquisition perspective, I find the more detailed notes very helpful. But if I were following that company year in and year out, I probably wouldn't. So just a question to make sure you're asking users that look at things at one point in time and may not look at the company again for a number of years.
I mean, just to answer the question, we did the process that was the discussions with users after the principles of disclosure discussion paper, we're talking huge numbers, really, really big numbers, and that wasn't a distinction that came through in the feedback on this topic. I mean, I don't think what we would be aiming for is for there to be, such limited accounting policies that a user couldn't pick them up and understand what it needed to know about a company, even if it wasn't the first time. It's more the stuff that is genuinely boilerplate, repetition of what's in the standards, etc. So I wouldn't want to give the impression that we're suggesting going further than we are, but that the piece of feedback you've described wasn't one that that came through heavily.
Morel.
Yeah. I just want to say that I fully agree with Ian's comments about situations in which boilerplate disclosures might serve a certain purpose. And, for instance, in Brazil, I remember that the level of knowledge about IFRS was relatively low when these standards were being adopted in that, in that jurisdiction. And I cannot prove it, but I have an idea that boilerplate disclosures might have helped a lot in the education process and gaining maturity and then understanding IFRS, not only during a one-year period, but in several years of this boilerplate disclosures until people really got used to these requirements. And so it really happens.
Okay, can we go to question two?
So some of you already touched on it, but our second question for you is, does the list of examples of circumstances in which an entity is likely to consider an accounting policy to be material to its financial statements in Appendix A accurately and helpfully describe such circumstances? If not, why? And are there other examples you would suggest including?
Christophe?
I struggle with example S for several reasons. Reason number one, I don't think that revenue recognition is the best topic for the example in the light of the very detailed disclosure requirements in IFRS 15. So, for example, you address the question whether they should disclose that some is overtime, some is at a point in time. That's a specific requirement in IFRS 15. I think an example would be better in an area in which it is not about checking individual requirements that are specified in the standard, but rather a field in which you really got to describe policies absent detailed requirements to focus on the requirements in IS1. That's reason number one. I struggle with the outcome of it because to me the example sounds as if the telco should describe, we sell handsets, we sell services, we allocate the fee between the two, and then recognize revenue for the handset at a point in time while we recognize a revenue for the service over time, as if this would be more or less the wording of the required disclosure. Most of that I would expect the reader to know. So I would expect the reader to know that a telco sells handsets and services. I would expect the reader to know that this is usually two separate performance obligations, that you've got to allocate a fee for revenue recognition purposes. If I were the telco, I would disclose my policy on determining standalone sales prices. This would be, for me, the one thing I would describe in allocating the fees to the handset and the service. Here is how we define or determine standalone sales prices. This, to me, would be the only policy thing with an incremental value. If I have a reader that is supposed to know IFRS 15 and know the business model of the company. So for me, the example sounds as if it requires much too much, which again would be boilerplate. Yeah. So that's why, as I said, I struggle with the example as a topic and with the outcome of the example. The other example is better. I don't have issues with that intangible assets and PPE example.
Very high expectation of the knowledge of users. Diana.
Yes, I will explain a little bit better the problem that I have with example T. In the case of the company need to be issuing a bond in the state. This will be very material for the company, for the users in the states to know that the principles, even if it will be a boilerplate description in the hands of something that is more used by to IFRS, I think that it will be very useful and even a legal requirement to put such a thing in a bond issue in the state. So I don't know.
Anybody else? The K? case, then we go to question number three.
So I guess question number three actually focused on example SMT. So going back to question two, do we have any other feedback on the proposed new paragraph 117B? Or any other comments on examples S or T?
Stephen.
Just to say, I think the focus on paragraphs 122 and 125 of IS1 is a good place to go. I think if users are looking for those key business-changing judgments and estimates, then actually making sure that those are highlighted, very easily identifiable, you know, maybe even put them in a separate note or something, just so that the users then can cross-refer to those without getting tied down in what they see as being the mess of boilerplate disclosures.
Ian?
I just wonder about the application of some of this, because things like revenue recognition impairment are such hot topics. The auditors and regulators are all over this, that to actually prove, demonstrate and get it audited this thing is immaterial is just going to such be a huge task. It's actually easier just to give the policy. It will be less work, and it's not less information for the reader, it's more information for the reader. If the reader doesn't want to read it, they don't have to. I just think it will be such an exercise to do this. Why would I bother?
Yeah, but material information should not be obscured by immaterial information.
If you go to the accounting policies note and read the intangible assets impairment disclosure, what are you expecting to find? You know, incisive information on the way the business is run? No, you get a load of accounting stuff on impairment accounting policies. You get what you want. If you don't want to read it, don't read it. Now, it shouldn't be on page one and in the middle of all the interesting stuff. That I agree with you. I think people should organise themselves accordingly. But I think the idea that somebody's going to go through this, I think that's true. I think where you've got an example is, I don't know, if we had an accounting policy on extractive industries, then, OK, then fair enough. We don't need that, just to be complete. I think that's a good example. I don't think where something is in this example, I don't think anyone's going to go through that process. I think you're just creating more work.
Nick?
I agree in the issue of materiality generally. That we may have to think about more in terms of working with the audit profession and with regulators in terms of actually making a real difference here. And I think that's the danger, that the easiest thing in terms of satisfying probably auditors, probably regulators, is more of a checklist mentality. We've done everything. Tick, tick, tick. Maybe the most cost-effective way of doing it. I'm not sure. Well, I am sure it doesn't help the user. And equally, I think we have to be careful that often we blame users for asking for more and more and more. And on occasions when they offer up stuff saying actually they no longer require it, I think there's an opportunity to bank that, because actually when they ask for more, it becomes a little bit of a difficult conversation then to be having.
Sometimes less is more.
Yeah.
Okay, any other comments on this? And I was a little bit quiet because I have a dissenting opinion on that, therefore I don't want to influence you. Having that said, I think we go now into the lunch break, and being back at 1:13 at 20:25.